at least we can start, I think. Jörg will give a very brief talk about the kind of stuff he has been doing on homogeneous shear flows. And I think in the week he has been here, he has done more work than I have done in the last 2 months.
Thank you very much. Okay. So, I will report about our first results in last year. So we are doing this work. We have been doing this work now for about 4 or 3 months. And this is done together with Uwe Eckert in Marburg, Swiss University. And the outline is the following one. First, I want to give a brief introduction. I want to discuss the physical model we are using. I will report about our first results, and I will end with a summary and an outlook. So, we all know that one of the fundamental postulates in turbulence theory is that of local isotropy at small scales for sufficiently large values of the Reynolds number. By the way, this is an input for most of the subgrid scale models which are used in large eddy simulations. Think, for instance, about the very well-known Smoluchowski model, where these isotropy assumptions are used. And that's why, from this point of view, it is also a very important feature which we have to investigate. As already mentioned by Lamley, when you have a turbulent flow with a mean shear, one will expect corrections in the inertial sub-range scaling of the energy spectrum. The question is, how large are these corrections and how strong do they affect the statistical properties at the smallest scale? In 1994, Zazuki and Giravalli came up with their wind tunnel experiments at extremely high Reynolds numbers, and they confirmed the local isotropy postulate by looking to the second order correlations. But a year later, Pumir and Schreiman reported about their direct numerical simulations on homogeneous shear flows, and they detected persistent deviations from the local isotropy by looking to the third order correlations, for instance, the skewness of the Stanwyld vorticity or the shear gradient, both quantities which are very sensitive to such deviations. And then the experiments by Zermatt Warheft and co-workers in Cornell were set up, and they did measurements on this on that question, and they could confirm the results of Pumir and Schreiman. Only to shortly remind you what they have done in their experiments. So here you see the experimental setup, this wind tunnel with this shear generating screen, and you see that a very nice linear mean flow profile is set up in the center of the channel, and you also see that the skewness of the shear gradient is decreasing, but it is not vanishing. It is remains very strong, and these measurements were extended in the last 2 years up to Taylor Reynolds numbers of 1,000, and it didn't vanish. So, please let me use in the following the this notation. X is the wall normal direction, or the direction in which the shear exists. We take y as the streamwise direction and z as the spanwise direction and the shear rate. So everything what I will talk now is taken in these coordinates. So what has been done so far in homogeneous shear flow simulation? At least we can
let me see if you turn it on. Yes, yes, turn it on.
That's okay.
So we can divide the shear flow simulation into two groups. One is by using finite difference methods, which were suggested by Gerd Schumann and Hildo Vashi in 1989. And what we will talk about here is the second group. These are pseudo spectral methods. And in order to use the fully periodic box, you have to do this so-called revetting procedure. So you are introducing a time-dependent grid, which is illustrated here. So it is skewed with respect to time more and more. Then you have to remesh it, and then it is skewed once more, remesh it, skewed once more, and so on. And this is a method which was first suggested by Mogano in 1981, which was used intensively by Rogers and Moyne in their simulations on homogeneous shear flows. Also other groups used it, for instance Tanaka and Kida from Japan, or also Lee, Rogers and Lee, Kim and Moyne, all in the around the 90s. And also Kumir and Schreiman used this method. So you see, this is taken from this paper, the temporal development of the fluctuations of the three components, the Greenwise component, Benwise component, one normal component. And you see that it is at least for such a small time period not stationary. So this is one disadvantage. And this was overcome in part by Fourier.
Why do you say it's not stationary? It's fluctuating more or less. Doesn't seem to have any trend, right?
Yeah, but okay, so if you follow up the development in this time period, it's not long enough, you have to
apply
longer periods. So this was overcome in part by Fumier and Schreiman. They had extremely long time series for their statistical analysis. What was also reported about were energy and entropy losses due to this remeshing procedure for very high shear rates. This was done in a paper by Lee, Kim, and Boyle in 1990. Okay, now let me come to our method. What have we done? We are using periodic boundaries in the stream and in the spanwise direction too. And we are using stress-free boundary conditions in the Wall-Normal direction. They are given by this relation. That means the fluid can slip freely along the side plane, and you have to apply a volume forcing in order to sustain the
turbulence. You define what your directions are, what streamwise will.
I have done it. I can do it once more.
Conventional.
Why don't you put it on the blackboard?
It's
so
standard.
Leave it on the blackboard, yeah. So that
y is streamwise.
X is y.
X is Y, is X, and Z is Z. Yes,
right. So the X direction is the direction
about changing the rotation at some point. So
yeah, we've already discussed that this week.
Okay, so what you want to have is this kind of linear shear flow profile for x taken from this interval, And this can be approximated by such a finite sum of cosines. And what we are doing is to apply the volume forcing in such a way that these things of our 2.5 million degrees of freedom remain fixed in time. So this is the kind of forcing. It's time dependent for sure. And this is what we are doing to...
Why six, not two, let's say? You always an
extra you can also take two, but...
Well, you want a good approximation of a linear profile, so you should add...
We want a good approximation.
Enough to be able to have a good linear profile.
Six is quite good.
You
always
have resolution.
Yeah. You can also take two or three, if it's not. So we are not fixed in this sense. Okay. We are integrating... So we are integrating the total velocity field, which is decomposed in the mean and the fluctuating part. These two equations and the parameters which are taken to define the Reynolds number is the full gap width, the Leech shear rate, and the kinematic viscosity, giving this Reynolds number. Up to now, we have taken aspect ratio from 1 to 2 pi to 2 pi. We, for sure, we have to look for larger aspect ratios, especially. For the coherent structures, is the extension in the streamwise direction sufficiently, or are the coherent structures affected by this small box size? This is one thing we have to do within the next month. So we started with a turbulent state, which was relaxed somehow and which was well set up. And this was the starting point of our statistical analysis. So now let me come to the results. First, we had to verify that it is a linear profile. And you see, this is the theoretical value, and this is these are the two runs we have done so far. And you can see that you have deviations from the linear profile for sure. Directly at the boundary due to the applied boundary conditions in our system. And the next, we looked for the energetic development in time. And so here are the three components. And this is the sum of the three components. And you see that it is quite rather good stationary. But you also observe that the amplitudes are relatively large compared to the higher Reynolds number case. And this can be explained by...
How many terminal lines or something like that?
Yes, so...
Two.
No. Turnover times are 120 in this, and here 50. These simulations become extremely expensive.
This is slow fluctuation.
It's
a very long
limit. Yeah,
depends
how we define it.
That's how I was defining it, with the two humps.
Yeah.
Okay, but it becomes a little bit more clear, this behavior, when you are looking at the coherent structures in your flow. So, and this is the turbulent streamwise velocity, and these are volume surface plots. So, this is taken at 0.2. -0.2, that means fluid which is flowing in this direction, and this is taken at 0.2, that means opposite time. And you see for small values of your shear Reynolds number, you get really extended structures which become more fragmented for higher values, and this is understandable. These are the tricky structures, and these structures are linearly unstable in turbulent shear flows. That means for higher values of the shear Reynolds number, they are becoming more and more fragmented. Okay, so we went on in our analysis of the stationarity, and we were looking for production equals dissipation, and this analysis was done for 50 electron overtime. And here you see the further.
That's not really an 80 ton overtime, is it? I mean, let's say shear times time.
Okay. These are what these are the units in which.
Yeah. So yeah. Shear time.
Shear time. Yeah. Okay. And so you see when taking the average in time and in the span and streamwise direction, you get these profiles in dependence of the wall normal direction, and this looks not as a homogeneous case, to be honest. But what you see is that the stationarity is fulfilled rather good. We have done these analysis for two disjunct time intervals. And so you see that the production equals dissipation relation is rather good fulfilled. One problem of all these investigations is that you have to run long time series, statistical convergence is relatively slow.
So what are you controlling to control T and epsilon? I mean, you're only controlling your forcing or?
Yeah, up to now we have both runs were done with the same viscosity, and we have applied a stronger shear, so by a factor of 4.
Do you have turbulent intensities across the channel?
This is coming up. Yeah. So then we. We're looking at the turbulent intensities. So this normalized Reynolds stress components. So you can see them here. And you see that the order of magnitude is in the region of that what is reported in the experiment. You also see in the experiment that it's not transverse homogeneous.
So this is the problem with these experiments. The earlier experiments did not have this kind of transverse inhomogeneity. If you look at, let us say, earlier experiments done in Johns Hopkins University years ago, they are much flatter across, including some I made many years ago. They are much flatter than these, and. I'm not sure why there is this inhomogeneity in the experiments and also in your simulations.
Yeah, in our simulations, for instance, when looking at this component, it is enforced by the boundary conditions to go to zero. So these are the boundaries.
Yeah, but why components are less homogeneous in the numerics than in this experiment?
Yeah, in the experiment, if you are coming to the wall, all components have to be.
Yeah, the thing is, of course,
not the boundary.
Everything was mirrored the wall, but the way it was done earlier, they were pretty flat almost all the way until you had the boundary layers, and then they would go down very fast. But here, it seems to have a very gradual inhomogeneity. And I'm not sure, I mean, I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, those experimental data don't show anything.
Because you truncate the Fourier series. Then there must be some.
The units, you see the
one at a time, I think, would help. Here, I'm
starting at zero, the other curve.
Gentlemen. Please, let's go one at a time. Canada here.
The inhomogeneity is not surprising because you truncate the Fourier series at n equal 5 or so, then there must be some Gibbs phenomena near the boundary. But the boundary may have some significant law.
Truncated at
the series, you truncated at n equal 5 or 6.
You mean my mean profile?
Yeah. Okay. At the axis, you truncated the Fourier series. If n equal infinity, it may present a linear shear, linear profile. However, if you truncate it, there must be some Gibbs phenomena. Boundary 0 and 1 must have some special law.
Uh-huh. but okay, I can't do that because if I would take the full series, I would hold all components in all x components fixed in time. So that is the problem. Maybe that's.
Rahul, Charlie, and Grisha.
No, I was just saying that this is from the 1998 paper. Yes. After discussions, Mark Nelkin called Baha. And he said in their later paper, it is not going up this much. No. But, okay, that is probably contained in the transparency in the web.
Okay,
okay.
They have
enlarged
the Taylor Reynolds
number. Okay, that's. And they need to have clear to conclude anything. I mean, in the middle of there, the data is all over the place, actually.
Yeah, so I mean, sure.
Those curves are really, in fact, wishful thinking in some sense.
So,
okay, if Rahul says that Warhaft has better data subsequently, well, we have to look at that. So. Okay, all right. Yeah. You have any other comments on why it's non-uniform across the channels? Any other comments you want to make?
Is it non-uniform across the channel?
Well, sigma xy, for instance, is a highly non-constant.
Certainly it's suppressed at the walls.
Yeah.
It has to be suppressed at the walls. And then the question is the Reynolds number high enough? It's getting a little more uniform.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's a moderate Reynolds number. Yeah. It's surprisingly well.
All right. Okay.
So we will have one more higher, you think it might be.
Then one can also see the slight trend from Reynolds 500 to Reynolds 2000.
Yeah.
It gets slightly flatter, and I mean, well, at this low Reynolds number, what to expect?
Yeah. Okay.
So,
so see,
I think that really depends on the boundary condition imposed. I mean, it's really propagating always deep inside. Either you impose the right boundary condition or you are completely non-homogeneous. Well, I don't think it matters. You can change a little bit with the Reynolds number, but still.
What is the right boundary condition?
What is the right one?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Otherwise, I would have already done that.
So, Srini, what were the Reynolds numbers in these Johns Hopkins experiments?
They were not all that high, by the way. So the very early ones would probably would be substantially smaller than these experiments here. But the channel itself was about 30 centimeters or 1 foot really, let's say, and about a foot or so. And except for maybe about a couple of inches at the very end of the tunnel, about 10 inches or so would be pretty homogeneous. But they had to fiddle around a lot. I mean, just not, wasn't done by simple elementary means.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, all right.
The next what we did was to look for higher order moments by units and cartridges. And we have done it for the spanwise vorticity as well as for this shear gradient. And you see that they are looking rather good in the center of our turbulent shear flow. So to bring it in to bring it in some comparison, let me give you this table where we have summarized all our results. So compared with the largest Taylor-Reynolds number run by this 89 experiment and the DNS by Rogers and by Kumir, and these last two are our simulations. So you see that the fluctuations are at least of the same order. You see that our shear rates are rather small compared to those shear rates, which are extremely high. It becomes a little bit more relative if you are taking this dimensionless shear measure. So you see we are at the same order of magnitude. Also for the Taylor-Reynolds numbers, we are in the range which is available for DNS of that type.
So you see any other tendency of reduction of students going to higher Reynolds number?
Yes. It is reducing.
Can you estimate the exponent?
It's extremely expensive, by the way, to have these simulations. We have only a limited amount of units, billing units, as a supercomputer.
What does S mean by itself? That's in some units?
That is shear rate.
In some units.
One over time.
No, I understand, but what does that number mean?
No,
that's a dimensional quantity. I don't know how it's not a dimensional quantity.
That is a dimensional quality. So the shear measure dimensionless, more sense makes
so it's that. Okay. So, in which case you're comparable.
So I have taken all the information from the papers I could get and to put it in some table to see where we are.
Are they all stationary?
This one is not stationary. And they are stationary?
They are stationary in the sense that there are large amplitude fluctuations.
So they have extremely large fluctuations. It is important to understand their extremely large fluctuations.
So all of these are obtained by some average, time average. All the data are obtained by some appropriate time average.
Yes.
Okay. And only a last point which I once briefly mentioned is we took a look at the decay of the temporal correlation. So this is the decay of the correlation for the one normal component. It is qualitatively the same for the spanwise component, and this is the streamwise turbulent velocity. You see that the decay, that they decay slower with respect to time, and for sure one expects memory effects due to the coherent structures in the streamwise direction. And what we are planning to do now is to do some kind of analysis of the correlation function. So you have a spatiotemporal correlation function. You can transform it by a Laplace transform and by applying a projector formalism, the Mobius-Swantzig projector formalism. You can bring it in such a shape where you have the time, the frequency coordinate, you have some exponentially relaxing terms, and you have a memory kernel which consists of the whole non-linear mode interaction. And one wish is it possible to quantify the effects of the coherent structures in the turbulent flow in this kernel and to make some to give some results for the decay of the correlation?
Actually, what is alpha and beta?
Alpha and beta are the indices of this tensor quantity.
So the K, for example, is a matrix.
Sure. In this
operator, not a scalar.
Yeah. This is a
symbolic notation.
It is a tensor.
So the omega has a delta alpha beta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think he's worried about the omega.
Okay, that's right. Yeah,
that's
missing a chronic
identity.
Sorry. Yeah.
Some symbolic notation. Operator
and
bus operator.
So I only wanted to sketch the. The important thing is are these two terms, one exponentially relaxing and one kernel. Okay. So come to an end. So we suggested a new method to prepare a quasi homogeneously sheared turbulent state by means of stress-free boundary conditions.
and we were able to achieve the statistically stationary state, but we saw violations of the transverse homogeneity. We were able to detect these coherent structures for relatively small shear rates in comparison to these numerical experiments, so they have pushed their programs up to the limit, and they were non-stationary and reported about big losses in the energy in this paper. Yeah, what is the future work? So as already mentioned, we will analyze spatial correlations. And so these are two papers where this MOBI-20 projector formalism was discussed for correlation functions. So you have to switch to Lagrangian correlations in this case. And one point is the last one. Is it, for instance, it would be interesting from our point of view to have a continuous change in the kind of forcing to drive the system in a kind of shear turbulence mode and in a kind of a more isotropic mode. And this can be done by performing a kind of crossover between the two kinds of forcing, but okay, there we have to do further investigation. Thank you very much.
Any comments? The quantization, you probably mean quantification or
Worm cell thickness.
You want just the
backhole,
right?
No.
The
size,
not
strings,
just
rings.